Welcome into episode 145 of the Godly Young Men podcast. Today we are actually going to be discussing an article I'm going to have you get into here in just a second that my brother sent to us. And very interesting. So we're curious to get your guys' thoughts. To that end, join our Discord because we have episode 150 coming up. And what we are going to do for episode 150...
This should be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to do an Ask Me Anything. You have to do it through Discord. We want to get as many people signing up and participating as possible. We are going to establish a brand new channel on there specifically for that episode. Ask Me Anything. So any questions, as long as it's appropriate and is good to answer, we will be...
It doesn't have to be exclusively Bible related. It can be anything. We'll probably get a lot of questions on there. So episode 150 might go a little longer than 30 to 35 minutes.
Yep. We're a bit longer. Yeah. We already got 100 on the Discord. If you're not there, make sure you're missing out. A lot of great content on there. A lot of guys posting. We got to do a better job of, it's so much to keep up with. There's a bazillion one comments coming in every single day, helping each other, accountability.
We got a hobby chat.
It's a great community. If you're not already on there, make sure to join that. But we have that coming up. So with that, yeah.
If you're unsure how to join the Discord, the link to join is in the comment section, the description of every YouTube video, and then every podcast for Apple Podcasts, the link is in the description.
So perfect.
That's how you can access the Discord.
And if you have any issues with it, make sure to message us, and we'll directly send you the link if it's not working or anything like that. But yeah. We're excited for it. We're excited for what's coming up. But as far as it goes with today, again, this is an article that my brother sent to both of us and said, hey, this might make good gym content. We both read it. It is very long. It's lengthy. Will, how about you introduce that for us?
Yeah, so I'm excited about this episode because I think where this podcast thrives, not to pump our own tires here, but is when me and Joe can kind of just go back and forth about, topics relating to masculinity and just kind of discuss them. And so that's what we're going to do. The article is called Men of the Future. It's by Mark Agranza, released September 22nd of this year. Very, very long, but kind of the gist of it is 20 Rules for Healthy Masculinity, a Guide for Young Men in the Age of Social Media. A lot of content on there, but we want to discuss these 20 rules. We're not going to get all 20 of them this episode. Next week, we'll discuss the second half. We'll do the second 10. We're going to do the first 10 with this episode. And really what we're going to do is we're going to read the rule that he gives, and then it's going to be quite simple. Joe, do you agree or disagree? Will, do you agree or disagree? Is kind of how we're going to go through this and just kind of give our thoughts. Some of these are really good in our opinion. Some of these maybe are partially good, and some of them we just flatly disagree with. So me and Joe have not really prepped on this in the sense of, like, I don't know what he's going to say. Yep. He doesn't know what I'm going to say. That's part of the fun of this episode, hopefully. So we will, just kind of go down the list here. If you want to read it again, it's called Men of the Future. It takes a while for him to get into even the rules. But I'll go ahead and get us into the first one, Joe, unless you have any introductory
thoughts.
We'll
link in the description, correct?
Yes, yeah. And we'll put the link in the description for the article. I think there are two cuss words in there. Just
content warning
there. We don't endorse everything, but again, it's a masculinity article, so we're like, hey, let's talk about it.
It's thought-provoking, and some of these we've already covered, so you'll know where we stand on a few of these. But he's got some thoughts that we have not covered.
Just interesting random stuff.
Random stuff. And yeah, if you get a chance to read it, seriously, it is good. He goes into each one quite a bit. We're not going to do that. We're just going to give the rule itself rather than the long thing that he has in between. But those I think are very much worth reading. And so, Will, I'm actually going to kick you off on this one. I'm going to start.
Sounds great.
And on the agree or disagree. So this is going to be a two-parter. He's got 20. We're not going to cover all 20. We're going to cover 10 in this one. In the next episode, next week, we will get into 11 through 20. So if you read the article, you'll know what's coming and you'll know our takes. I guess you'll find out our takes next week. But number one, as we get into it, are the 20 rules for masculinity in the age of social media. Practice phone calls over texting. Practice phone calls over texting. So instead of, he goes on to say, basically texting is cheap and we should, in order to build relationships
funny. He says, text communication apps are the most effective anti-vulnerability tool ever devised. It's nearly impossible to be 100% vulnerable online, as by the time you're done texting, the initial emotion your body language would have revealed in real life has been replaced by your desire to project an ideal version of yourself. One way to reverse this habit is to practice phone calls over texting without giving your friends notice. He says, hint, a non-masculine person is unlikely to be comfortable with it. So likely to be uncomfortable with it. He says, think twice before becoming friends with them. They're either insecure or manipulative or both.
If you're asking me
if I agree or disagree, Joe, I do agree, actually. I'm a phone call over text person for when it comes to, like, kind of serious things.
Anything
I'll tell my wife all the time, like, if she's like, well, I don't, I don't know how they'll take this. Or like, well, then just call them. Like, if it's a slightly, like, you know, silly stuff, but like, you know, trying to plan stuff with my mom or dad, and, you know, and she's like, well, I don't know. I don't want to offend them if I, and she's like, just call them then. And so, you know, without getting into everything he goes into here, I think I do agree with this one. I think texting for like matters of convenience and obviously, you know, for matters of expediency, I should say, but like work things or things that can very easily be a text like, hey, did you stop by this? Or, hey, did you see this? Or whatever, like, that's fine. When it comes to like a serious conversation, you're wanting to get their thoughts on XYZ, I would agree. I mean, I don't have a ton of time to just give phone calls all the time, but I like the idea of phone call over text. How about you?
Yeah, if I have an opportunity to do the phone call, even if I'm driving somewhere short, 10 minutes to the store, whatever it is, I'll get on the phone, call my brother, call my mom, call my wife, whatever it is. So I like phone calls. Obviously, I'm not going to text and drive at that point. But even with a texting during the day, it's great to keep up with somebody on the small level. But yeah, now what I would say, the only thing I'll add to this before we get to number two, I do think that sometimes if you are going to have a very serious conversation, it is best to write it out. Don't send it to them, but it is best to write out your thoughts and at least be able to work through your thoughts. So, you know, you may be typing on a notes app or you may be journaling or even an email to yourself where you write it out like, I want to make sure I hit these points. Sometimes that can very much help if you're talking about something of confrontation. If you send that to them, though, it usually doesn't go well because
it's devoid of body language. It's correct. Devoid of context. Yeah.
Correct.
Well, I think there's... talking on the phone is a lost art. Like people my age are scared to do it. Like, oh, I'd just rather text. And you know, you see like when you're calling customer service for something, right? You can either get a chat bot or talk to a real person. It's like, I'd rather talk to a real person every single time.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, that's
if you're in a group though, text sometimes can, you know, instead of the phone calls to seven different people, sometimes
not everybody has time to just
I was gonna say there are exceptions to this, but
so two agrees to start.
Two agrees to start. Practice right. Phone calls over texting.
Number all right,
two.
Joe, kick you off for his second rule for masculine in the age of social media. Agree or disagree? Never judge a man based on his political opinions, is what he says. Never judge a man.
I disagree with this one.
Okay.
I disagree with this one.
Why?
Because your political opinions tell a lot about you. Doesn't mean that you are worthless. Doesn't mean you're any of those things. Doesn't mean that you can't change your mind either. So we have to be careful when we talk about judging a man. But if there is a man who's voting for Mom Donnie, yes, I will be up in New York, the New York mayor. If you are voting for Kamala, you know, something along those lines. Yeah, this isn't a political podcast, but I will think a certain way about you. And I don't think I'm going to be wrong because I'm a believer, and I've talked about this plenty on the podcast, I'm a believer in microcosms. I think your political opinions are a microcosm of you. Are you a generous person? Are you a kind person? Do you think about others? Are you, you know, do you...
Are you a virtue signaler?
Exactly. Are you passive aggressive? Are you a virtue signaler? All of those things, in my opinion, can be encompassed in a person's political beliefs, political opinions. This would have been great to write about 40 years ago because at that point, you know, or go back 60 years of like JFK or something. Okay, at that point, yeah, if you're across the neighbor or across the fence from your neighbor and you're talking to him and one guy votes for Nixon, one guy votes for JFK... it's not all that different. Nowadays, we are worlds apart, and if you are supporting abortion and LGBTQ and things like that and are a rabid about it, I will absolutely judge you based off of that.
Yeah, we agree. I disagree with this. I get where he's going with it.
I do too.
He says, your political stances say little about your character and worth as establishing a person's morality from politics depends on their motivation. So I disagree with that initially. Like, I think it says a lot about your character and worth, actually. But he says basically you can have two individuals with the same political opinions but with two completely different characters.
I agree with that.
That's true. And so I think his point is like, man, get to know somebody on a deeper level than just what do they post on social media about. And I understand that. At the same time, I fully agree with Joe. Like, man, it's very in vogue right now to like not have a political opinion, and so that's one thing. But if you're like, if you like have a political opinion and it's just the complete wrong side, sorry, I am going to judge you for that, as Joe spoke to. If you're like pro drag queen story hour and pro gay marriage and pro abortion, like I think you can and should be judged for those opinions as somebody who's a, you know, for us golly young men. I don't think I don't think there's this realm of like, well, I can have this opinion, but you probably shouldn't judge me for it. Like, no, if it's a crappy opinion, I'm going to judge you for
it.
Well,
and he may say that that's not political. On the other hand, I'd say if you're voting for anybody of a certain party, inherently is political. Anybody of that certain party, that's what you're getting with the party line, are all of those things. And so, yeah, if, you know, if a guy's kind of confused or, hey, my family voted a certain way, for lifelong XYZ, you know, okay, yeah, I'm going to sit around and talk to the guy. It's not like I don't talk to people across the aisle. On the other hand, Yeah, I want to get to know them a little bit more, but if it turns out that they're staunchly backing a lot of these things, absolutely. I will be judging based off of that to some degree, and I don't think I'm wrong for that. Number three.
I think this is the most interesting one when it comes to, like, do we agree or disagree?
This is so interesting. Agree or disagree? Stop reading self-help books. Agree or disagree with that?
So I think I largely disagree with this, actually. I'll kind of give some of his background here. He says, self-help can help, but it's usually cheating. This varies depending on the book, but self-help often prescribes reverse psychology techniques rather than genuine character building. He goes on to give an example. He says, self-help books often operate under the same philosophy. They're less about learning to be vulnerable and more about convincing yourself and others that you are happy. So here's why I would say I largely disagree. I get what he's coming from, and I would wager that 70 to 80% of self-help books are probably pretty useless and
I'd agree.
You know, did not need to be written, and you're going to live just fine in life without ever reading them. Where I disagree with it is kind of in the finality of it, like stop reading self-help books. I think there's a lot of books that can kind of help you grow when it comes, because I mean, a self-help book could be like a how to be a better workout person book. It's like how to do better with your workouts, or how to get healthier, or how to do better mentally, or all those things. Like, there are experts in certain fields for a reason, and if I want to learn more about something, I do think, like, hey, I'm going to go to the person who studied it a lot more. Again, I get where he's coming from in the sense of, like, it's kind of a cheap way to do it, and again, I think a lot of them are basically just the same thing repackaged time and time again. And if you're going to a self-help book to find meaning in life and, like, raise you out of your depression, okay, then yeah, that's a problem. But, like, to me, a self-help book is like, man, I really need to... And maybe I'm just not using the right definition for self-help books, but, like, man, I need to get better at finance, or I need to get better with my exercise and eating. Let me find a good book on that. Like, I'm fine with that. What are your thoughts on it?
I think you're exactly right. We got to define self-help. We got to define what he's talking about. Because if I look at a book like Atomic...
Do you agree or disagree?
I'm with you. I by and large, disagree. Stop reading self-help books. On the other hand, man, he's got some doozies in here that I do agree with. Like, I don't agree with him. The pickup artist industry is the perfect example. Pickup artists are generally incapable of charming a woman. All they learn and then teach is how to trick a woman into thinking she's charmed via a set of premeditated rituals.
The speed version, essentially. Yeah,
he's exactly right. On the other hand, okay, that's kind of the low-hanging fruit of the self-help industry is the pickup artist. What about a book like Atomic Habits? This is where we'd have to define terms. Maybe, I don't know if he would agree with that. Atomic Habits is a fantastic book. Power Habit, right? Charles Duhigg. That's another great one. But I think Atomic Habits from James Clear is one of the better self-help books that you can possibly read.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a finance version of that kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've read a lot of self-help books that I honestly gleaned lots from. On the other hand, I do think he's right that a lot of it is just reverse psychology techniques rather than genuine character building. There is that level as well, which are a lot of these are like how to trick yourself into doing specific things rather than just building the character. But the struggle in that is some guys don't know where to start specifically on building that character. And building character can be really, really difficult, and it can take a lot of structure in your life. It takes accountability, and it takes setting out certain routines to be able to build out that character. The self-help books can get you started on the routines that will then build character. So I would say they are not a complete process from taking you A to Z, but they may start the alphabet for you. They may go A, B, C, D, and then you've got to take up the rest from there. But without getting you started on that, without learning Atomic Habits, or I'm trying to think, I got a bazillion one of them over on my my shelf over here, but I mean, there's...
I was going to say, I wouldn't think you disagree with this one based on... Or that you agree
that I would
with
agree.
This one based on...
But I think he makes some very interesting points. So once again, we would just say, read it. Read the article. Come to your own conclusions on this. He makes a point toward the end of Carl Jung and being a better alternative, antithesis of the self-help industry. Yes and no. I know what he's saying there. But Carl Jung, like, if you're into that, obviously a Jungian psychoanalysis, what they call it, J-U-N-G, if you're going to look him up. And he's huge in the psychology world. Like, Jordan Peterson is huge on that. So it's types and archetypes and things like that, antitypes. Really, really good stuff. The shadow self, he gets into a lot of those things that I happen to agree with a lot of his stuff. And there's some things that I think he's somewhat lacking on, and that we've grown a lot in the self-help industry. So that's a lot of words on that, sorry. But, by and large, I disagree, but I get his point.
Okay, number four, Joe. You ready? Agree or disagree? He says, learn to throw and take a punch. Learn to throw
take a punch. I agree with this. I've actually been looking into getting... My brother and I may start Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. We've been talking about that. There's a place in Dixon. I was also, before that, looking up boxing because I very much want to know this. I'm well aware of, full disclosure, like, I've never been in a legitimate fight. In hockey, yes, I've had some scuffles and, you know, push guys around, and I suppose, like, some punches were thrown, but with gloves on, things like that. Like, not a legitimate fight, taking a punch, nothing like that. I've been fortunate on the one hand that that has not happened, but on the other hand, there's also a level of masculinity that goes along with that of learning how to be in a fight. So, no, I'm not going to go picking a fight, but I do agree that it's important for a man to know how to throw and take a punch, and that's why I think I am going to be looking into boxing lessons.
I'll keep it short on this one. I agree as well. He says, the biggest character lessons you'll ever learn as a young man, this I disagree with. He says, will come as a result of physical confrontation. That's probably not the biggest character lessons you'll learn. You'll learn some. But yeah, physical confrontation, I don't think we should be afraid of it. I don't think we should do everything we can to avoid it, which is what you see with a lot of the kind of the feminine mousy guys out there. Is like, whatever it takes to avoid confrontation, either verbal or physical, like, sure, whatever. Like, those are the type of guys that stand behind their wife when the guy comes to mug them, you know, like, you don't want to be that guy. He says at the end, it's all about learning to stand up for yourself when the opportunity presents itself. He says, playing sports helps, a physical confrontation is par for the course. Like, I think about this, like, you know, my son, when he starts playing sports, do I want him to be, you see this in football especially, man, if the quarterback gets hit hard, those offensive linemen, those receivers will come and just lay out the defenders. Like, you don't do that to my quarterback. And I think a lot about, like, what I want my son, Jackson, 4 years old right now, being the guy that, you know, if his quarterback gets hit, just kind of stands off to the side, like, right. I don't do that stuff. Or do I want him going and defending the, I think I want him going and defending the quarterback. Yep. Like, yeah, don't do anything to seriously hurt anybody. But as far as, like, yeah, you don't do that to my quarterback, or even, like, you don't do that to my sister. Like, if somebody's picking on a sister, like, I kind of hope he's not afraid of physical confrontation at that point. And so I would agree with this one about learning to throw and take a punch.
Yeah. That's, I was going to say, in hockey, that's what it was, is I was not picking a fight ever. I was a pretty clean hockey player. But if somebody did hit my goalie or my teammates, that's when I'd go after him. And my brother also, he was more scrappier than me, but one of the biggest fights he ever got in was defending me, which was really nice. And so I think that's huge of what you're talking about. Yep. Number 5, never order a Cosmopolitan. I'm going to assume that both of us agree with this, but for different reasons.
I was trying to think of, like, a alternative we could do for this that obviously without alcohol, because neither one of us are fans of drinking at all, or think that anybody should, specifically golly young men. But what is his point kind of in
so
this one?
For those that are unaware, like, what is a cosmopolitan? I had to look it up because I
did too, actually.
I don't drink. You can do, like, mocktails, I suppose, and get them. But a classic cosmopolitan, it's a cocktail. Calls for vodka, orange liqueur, like triple sec, cranberry juice, and fresh lime juice.
It's, like, super sweet. So he says ordering a drink should be a manly exercise, no different than working out at a gym. He says juicy summer drinks are for women.
Yeah. So I think this is a good discussion, actually, to have, because you'll see a lot in the masculinity sphere, even in the Christendom masculinity sphere. Doug Wilson, you'll see him with a little bit of scotch or something along those lines, and then a big cigar. And he's a Presbyterian, like, he's in the Christendom world as part of the masculinity side. And it's kind of a masculine thing, I suppose, to have your whiskey or, you know, whatever it may be, maybe your cigar. And so, yeah, maybe we can, it's not like they're getting drunk or anything like that. Not a fan. I don't think you can equate that with masculinity, equate your specific drink with masculinity. The ability to tell yourself no to those things, in my opinion, is way more masculine than not. So, yeah, we're not going to get into a full discussion on alcohol in and of itself, but I did want to make that point of, like, I think we do ourselves a disservice when those things go hand in hand. A man who can hold his liquor, man, that is not the test of masculinity.
I think it's whether a bigger test to know, can you just stay away from it all?
Correct. Like, because you like your whiskey neat type of thing. Who cares? Who cares at the end of the day? I think you're doing yourself a disservice. So, yeah, I would disagree with, or I would agree, never order Cosmopolitan, but never order any of those things. He's talking about the fruity drinks. Yeah.
The angle that I was going to take on this was, like, what should be the godly young man's drink of choice, like, vice of choice? Obviously not alcoholic. Like, is it a soda? Is that fine? Is it, like, a fruity thing? Like, I don't know. There's because taking it out of the realm of alcohol, again, we don't think any godly young man should drink, would be, like, fruity sugary coffee drinks, or just,
I was going to say frappuccinos, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, it's just kind of a silly one. He even puts at the end, like, don't take this one too literally. But number 6, Jobs, we're spending a lot of time on each one here.
Yeah, sorry.
I think it's my turn to ask you, right?
Yep.
It says number six, only buy furniture if you have a girlfriend. Agree or disagree? He says furniture in your apartment has the purpose of making your everyday environment more pleasing and comfortable for other people, not for yourself. says, if you don't have a girlfriend, there's no purpose in buying furniture. Just get a couple of chairs, a table, and a bed. It's all you need. He says, don't even get a couch. Thoughts on that?
This was an eye-opening one to me, because I didn't really... I mean, I've run across that before, but just the way that he kind of builds that out. I don't... What are your thoughts? This one challenged me, because I get exactly where it's coming from. By and large, once again, I think I disagree. I'm okay with a guy having a nice place to have people over. I hope that he would be hospitable. Things like that. The ultra bachelor pad, you don't need anything. Just pull up a table and chairs from IKEA for $20 type of thing. Or, you know, man, I think there's, and he even says if you're an interior designer or something like that. I'm not saying all guys need to be interior designers, but there is a level of your aesthetic matters. The things that you surround yourself with, putting plants in your home, which we're terrible at because we kill them all. But, you know, plants in your home, there's the feng shui, as they say, and I probably butchered that, but the idea of the flow state through your house, so you don't walk into couches and things like that, walk through a door into couches. Like, you want to make sure things flow appropriately, and I think there is a level of that that is actually really good for mental health. So I think I disagree with this one, that it's okay for you to have furniture, but I get his idea of, like, man, going for the... filling your house, not a huge fan, but I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, we're 6 for 6 on this. I agree with you and disagree with him on this, you know, never buy furniture thing. One of the things that I've been thinking a lot about lately, really prioritizing more and trying to just emphasize more in my life, is the idea of rest.
Mm.
I was talking about it with some of my co-leaders at Chick-fil-A and my operator. Like, we don't rest very well in our society. And the reason that I don't think we rest very well is, first of all, we always are doing something. Yeah. And if we're not doing something, we're listening to something. If we're not listening to something, we're talking to someone. Like, we just never rest. And so I think, and obviously his point is kind of for the single guy here, like, I think you need, and I think it's perfectly fine to have kind of an abode, a realm, where you can just rest, a couch to sit and just maybe do nothing else on, but just kind of sit in silence. Like, the amount of minutes we sit in silence every day are, like, zero. Listen to stuff in the car, listen to stuff in the shower. Some people like to just be able to sit, to just, and also enjoy kind of, you know, what God has blessed you with. I'm totally fine if, and I know this is not really rest either, but like just enjoying a football game, enjoying a book, you know, just sitting and resting. And I think kind of the, you know, aesthetic of like just bed and chairs. And I mean, he literally says, if your friends are regularly coming to visit you, they can sit on the floor. Like, you don't have to do that. Like,
right.
I just kind of disagree with that altogether. Like, I get kind of the, you don't want to be just all about luxury and all about comfort and just never being uncomfortable. But, like, man, it's your house. Like, I think having a space, a dedicated space for you to, you know, go out and slay the dragons, go out and work really hard and go work out and then come home and rest. I think that's a good thing. So that's kind of my take on that. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I think you're exactly it, or exactly on it. Like, rest is we're finding more and more how important that is, especially in the hustle culture. So that's such a valuable point. Just
Gen
having,
Z and even millennials too, like, they hustle all the time.
Yeah, all the time. You know, 3 jobs or whatever it is. They're doing Uber, which isn't quite as big a deal as it was, but still Uber, DoorDash or whatever it is, on top of their other job, on top of going to school. Like, you just need a place to crash. You need a place that's comfortable. You need a place that feels good walking into. And no, guys aren't going to be able to create the home the way a woman will. That's part of the feminine touch. I fully believe in that. On the other hand, make sure that you have what you need type of thing, you know, is what I would say. Number 7, dress well as a form of respect.
I agree. Yeah, I agree with this one for sure. I think we've railed before against kind of the overly casual nature of the society that we're in, job interviews and stuff like that. But even beyond that, like, and when I go out to eat, which we don't do very often, or just even go to my parents to hang out, or go to Joe and Alyssa's house to hang out, or do whatever, like, I put a little bit of thought into what I'm going to wear, and it's not in a vain way or not in a, like, anything like that. It's just like, I want to look decent. I want to look good. I want to dress well. If we're going out, we just recently went on vacation, went to a, you know, some decently nice places. And, you know, my thought was, I'm going to scale up rather than scale down. Like, I would rather dress a little bit nicer. I'm not going to, you know, wear a tux to the seafood place or anything like that. But I do think optics matter. Mm-hmm. And when people look at you and they immediately, their eyes are going to be drawn to, what are you wearing? What shoes do you have on? That kind of thing. Like, impressions matter. And if you look like a slob, people are going to have a negative impression of you, versus if you look well put together, you know, you look like you at least put some thought into what you looked like before you went out of the house, you're going to be thought more highly of. No different than the job interview example. Like, if you present yourself well at church, present yourself well, again, going to Home Depot. And I'm not saying you can't go out in joggers and, you know, whatever, but I don't know. Put some thought into it because optics matter is kind of my take on that.
How fully agree. Fully agree. The he says, don't dress up for vanity or ambition. Dressing up should be a humbling exercise. If you're going to get a drink at the Ritz Hotel, dress well, but do it as a form of respect to the great men of the past. I say the past because genuinely aristocratic people are hard to come across today. It's fake until you make it is also cheating because you're not learning to be classy or aristocratic. You're only mirroring the habits, rituals, and behaviors of your favorite TV series. Thought that was interesting. I would say find your own style, but there needs to be some level of style. Yeah. And big part of it, you're talking about how other people respect you, and I fully agree as a form of respect.
Respect yourself.
Respect yourself, right? Yeah. I mean, it's an internal thing. Like when I'm dressing better, when we went out to that nice dinner, yeah, I do want to dress well because if I had walked in and like, you know, khakis polo shirt, and a polo, yeah. First off, they would have kicked me out. And second off, I don't think that I would have felt near the same as when I walked in. I'll just tell a story real fast and move on. Went to a very nice restaurant one time with my wife. It was an anniversary thing in New York, actually. And we see a guy, we're sitting there, we're dressed up as well. Everybody in the restaurant's dressed up as a 3-Michelin-star restaurant. Very, very nice. And here comes this guy and his daughter, and he's in a literal tracksuit. I don't know how he got through the door. He must have been a billionaire or something. I have no idea. But a literal tracksuit, and she's in like a jumper, basically. And they go and sit, and they didn't speak English, and it just drove me nuts because then everybody had to come and figure out what they were saying. It was a crazy experience. But the whole point was like, it did kind of bring things down. Everybody's in this mindset of, man, we're all dressed to the nines. Everybody's feeling really good about it. We're also paying for it. And then somebody comes in dressed like that, and it just kind of just brought everything down to some degree. And that sounds dumb. There's just a level of respect of yourself and of others when it comes to dressing.
All right, number 8. Very interested to hear your thoughts on this one. Learn to cry in private, he says. Learn to cry in private. Agree or disagree?
Obviously, I agree.
There's some background here.
I agree. By and large, I keep using that phrase, by and large, because there's nuance. There's nuance. There's a time and a place. It's okay to cry, and he gets into this. It's okay to cry with a funeral, something along those lines. He's got some lines in there I don't agree with in terms of, and this may be later in one of his ones we'll get to next week, I think, about if his wife, you know, or children were to die.
That's not in this one, though.
Okay, I was going to say, I feel like that was in a later one. And, you know, just being standing up and not crying about it and things like that. Like, no, there's absolutely times to grieve, times to cry, and it's okay to cry in front of people very occasionally. Most of the time, learning to cry in private, I would very much agree with, which means two things. First off, yeah, you're not a blubbering mess in front of everybody else. It's okay, again, if the time is right on an occasional thing. We've talked about it. We've had an episode on crying. The other thing, though, is learn to cry, because a lot of guys just go zoop, and it kind of goes up, and they never cry about anything, and I don't think that's healthy in the least.
Yeah, so the reason I would agree with this as well is because his first line here, if you find yourself often crying without any control over it, it just means you're emotionally unstable. Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Yeah.
And he says, learn to cry in private, meaning have some control over it. Like, if there's a moment you're in front of people, man, maybe you put the wall up, but then when you're by yourself, that's when you let it go. Like, I would agree with that. I do think that you need to, as we had that episode, Should Grown Men Cry? Like, there's a time and a place to cry, and it probably shouldn't be in front of everybody just kind of nonstop without you. Like, you need to be able to control it, is the ultimate point that I would make here, is like, you need to have some control over, and again, we're not, just to give the qualifier, we're not talking about at your daughter's wedding or at a funeral where you lost somebody close to you or stuff like that, but, you know, when maybe things get a little heated, something's going really poorly at work, or you're having an argument or, you know, disagreement with somebody in your family, whatever it is, man, if you just kind of burst into tears all the time, that's just not a great look. You need to learn to control that, and if you have to let out some emotion later, let it out later, but don't be emotionally unstable.
He's got a line in here that I'll read real fast, and we'll move on. First off, he says on the too long didn't read, become the shoulder people can cry on, not the other way around. Thought that was a great line. But I love how he says this in here. Focusing on meaningful memories involving family members, even if painful, or especially if painful, is a great way to experience tears of joy. Tears of joy are nothing like tears of sadness. They will make you more appreciative of life and more capable of handling future emotional challenges. It's essential to do this in private or with your loved ones, because these are special moments between you and God. I love that idea of the tears of joy and recalling a certain memory. We were doing this the other day, recalling, you know, when my 5-year-old was like 2, and some of the things that he said, and it was the cutest thing. It's like, man, I miss those times. And sometimes that's when those tears can start to come. Allow for that. I think that's a really good thing. Okay. Number 9. Sorry to get the screen back. Number 9. Stop trying to be funny all the time.
Full agree.
Full agreement.
Full agree. This is not even close. Like, absolutely. He says there's a reason why comedians never make the top 10 list of most attractive professions for men to women.
That's a great line.
Trying to be funny all the time usually hides either deep-seated insecurities or unwillingness to take, and I think that's mostly this one, unwillingness to take life seriously, i.e. taking on responsibilities such as being a provider and protector. We've gone off on this guy, this type of guy before, the guy that is just always kind of looking around like, who's laughing at me? Who can, you know, can I make a joke that's going to make one person laugh? It's like, having a sense of humor is great. I think you are an incomplete godly young man if you do not have a sense of humor. But if you're the class clown that is, you know, you're at dinner at the Mexican restaurant with 10 other people and you're just always trying to say something's going to make people laugh and never really being serious, it's just not a – you're an unserious person. And I think for the most part, we want to be serious people who can laugh and have a good time. But, you know, we're not – because what it becomes is, are people looking at me? Are people listening to me? And that's kind of where you run into some problems. So, full agree on this one.
Man, this is a great article. Sorry, I'm reading it again. A good sense of humor is also a sign of healthy masculinity, but a constant need to be seen as a man with one is not. Yeah, humor is important. Being, you know, saying some funny things, having a great sense of humor, being willing to laugh, all of those things is masculine. It's very important. So don't misunderstand us. What Will said, like, we want to take that in and we want to make sure that we are allowing ourselves to do that without being the butt of the joke, without always having to be the funny guy. And he makes a point. I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. So one thing he says is, what do you consider sacred? Tell me about that. Rather than all the jokes, tell me something you consider sacred. Once again, killer line. I think that's such a needed thing of, before we make jokes about everything, tell me what you consider sacred and things you won't make jokes about. On the other hand, he also goes in on memes. And I'm curious your thoughts, Will, on, we got guys in the Discord. Great, hilarious memes. You know, memes that get posted that, make you chuckle or make you think, whatever it is. Most of the time, memes are not intended to be serious. They're intended to be lighthearted and funny and things like that. So what are your thoughts on memes in general, just very briefly before we move on?
I don't have a problem with him. I mean, he says the reason why is there's no class in mocking other human beings. I think some human beings deserve to be mocked, personally, and that might be a very hot take, very harsh sounding. Like, if you make a fool of yourself, I think you have every right to be mocked and ridiculed. I think shame needs to be brought back into our society. So I get his point. Like, it's kind of a cheap version of humor. And a lot of them are stupid online. A lot of the humor is stupid. But, like, I don't have a – if his main reason is, like, because you shouldn't mock other human beings, I do disagree with that. Like, I think, once again, you shouldn't be looking around going, who can I make fun of or anything like that. But, man, if somebody is being stupid or is dressing like a furry or something, yeah, I'm going to mock them. I'm going to make fun of that. And there's something cool about – you see a meme and everybody recognizes, like a shared internet experience. Yep. Like, I get that. I understand that. Maybe that's the Gen Z person in me talking, but I don't really have a problem with
it. No, it's shared culture. Culture. That's always been important. There's just been different things. Going to the barbershop and everybody kind of knowing the town gossip from going to the barbershop, whatever it is. That's the way it used to do it. Memes are that way now. It is the way to engage in a shared culture.
What's interesting, though, I just thought of this. I don't usually post memes. That's not you're not really going to catch me posting that. I will laugh at them. And, you know, if somebody sends one to me, I'll laugh at it. And so maybe, now that I'm just kind of going back over in my head, like, I don't have a problem with them. I'm also not the guy that's just going to post them. I mean, you see those, like, 38 and 40-year-old men that just post memes all the time. Like, it's probably not great either. So I get what he's saying.
I think if you're the guy that constantly makes memes, that's the way you think is in memes, and you got to meme everything. You have a problem. If you can make a meme every once in a while, Jack makes some really funny memes. My brother. Like, but he's not doing that all the time. He obviously takes things seriously, but occasionally something will hit him. He'll make a meme or he'll send one, and that's funny. But, be careful on that. I just was curious to get your thoughts.
Yeah, that's good. All right, number 10. This is for you, Joe, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it's
number 10. Take responsibility for a friend's pain. Agree or disagree? Take responsibility for a friend's pain.
I agree. I agree. This was an interesting one, and I had to reread a couple of these things. It's an interesting concept. He says, this is not about making you feel better about yourself, but to learn your limits. Genuinely helping someone means taking responsibility for his or her failures, whether personal or professional. If cheering a friend up cheers you up, you're not sacrificing anything. This is why giving money to homeless people is a meaningless act. Aside from the fact that many homeless people stay homeless because people provide them with cash for sandwiches, the act is not genuine charity because it does not involve giving up more than you'd bother picking up from underneath a car on a rainy day. The same logic applies to friends. If a friend is depressed, see if you can look at him like his parents do, i.e. it's my fault, and then make genuine sacrifices to help him. This will teach you how hard it is to improve someone's life, and you'll have a real reason to feel good about yourself if you succeed. Try your best and you will. yeah, there's parts I kind of disagree with in the fact that I think everybody has to be take ownership of themselves to some degree. On the other hand, it would be a really good exercise if young men thought this way of how can I now step out of myself and not do the moral therapeutic deism where I'm a moral person and I'm helping other people, but really it's making me feel better about myself, where it's kind of the therapeutic side of the morality. No, genuinely getting outside of yourself and saying, I'm going to take their happiness on and try to do it. I think everybody has to be able to create their own happiness and find it within Christ and also find it on their own. So I'm not saying that it should become that. I just think from an exercise point of view, it's a very good exercise to try to help somebody in a genuine tough spot with no expectation of return, with no like, well, this will make me feel better, any of those things. Because so often we run everything through kind of selfish lens. This is the exact opposite of, I'm going to come alongside this person and do whatever it takes, and it's going to cost me something, and there's going to be a sacrifice in helping somebody else. I'm not going to disagree. I don't think that's a bad thing, by and large. What are your thoughts?
This was the hardest one for me to kind of figure out.
This was tough.
With that, I don't think we have any more time, actually. We're going to wrap right there. No.
It's tough, man.
It's really tough because my brain and kind of the way that I work is like, man, you're responsible for yourself. If you make stupid decisions, it's not my fault, it's your fault. And that's a bad trait. Like, that's not a good thing. And kind of to Joe's point, like, if every young man thought this way, I think the world would be a better place. Here's kind of where I fall with it. When you talk about taking responsibility and the line about, you know, kind of if a friend, you know, see if you can look at him like his parents do, basically it's my fault and make genuine sacrifices. I'm good with that the closer the person is to you, in the sense of like, if it's your wife, absolutely, you 100% should do that. If it's your kids, 100% you should do that. If it's your brother or sister, sibling, parent, sure, as an adult or something, sure. Where I struggle is when you get outside of the family realm and like as far as the responsibility goes. And so for like a really close friend, best friend, sure, good with it as well. But as you start working your way kind of down the list of acquaintances and kind of the warmness in the friendship kind of gets a little colder and colder. Man, I feel like us as humans have so much responsibility, specifically guys, have such responsibility that we have to hold for ourselves, first of all, our wives, our children. It's a pretty big burden to bear to that. Let me add my three closest friends on there as well and make sure, and I, you know, sacrifice for them and have a mental level of responsibility for them. That's a lot. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't. Like, I agree with Joe in the sense of I think it's a good exercise if somebody's going through something to say, like, man, what can I do for them? Like, what can I sacrifice to give? How could I have helped them more in this scenario? I don't know. I just feel like it's a pretty overwhelming thought. And maybe that's what he's getting at, is like it's something we need to bear. But it's a pretty overwhelming thought to carry on with that as a responsibility in addition to your wife, in addition to your kids, in addition to your siblings or whatever it is. And so I'm not really giving an answer. I think overall I agree with the principle.
Right.
I don't agree with how broadly he applies it, if that makes sense. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
We're pretty spot on.
Yeah.
I'd say we're pretty down the line. That is a big part of this, is like, you can't take everybody's on. For a young man, if I'm 15, 16 years old and I got a good buddy who's going through some stuff, perfect time to practice this. Yeah, get outside yourself, make some sacrifices, do things that you wouldn't normally do, you know, of going to his house at 1 a.m. because he's really struggling. You know, those type of things where it's like, it's my responsibility. I'm going to make sure he gets through this. Fantastic. Okay, yeah, you got a wife. You got a wife next to you, and three kids, and you know, a couple rooms next door, type of thing, and somebody that needs help at one, but you got a bazillion other things taking place right now. You got to protect your family. Yeah, it gets a lot more difficult. So your point's very valid.
Well, it's interesting that he seems to be writing this from a non-married person's perspective. I don't know a thing about this guy, but kind of the don't buy furniture unless you have a girlfriend thing. Kind of, it's the bachelor feel. So like, I do think that's a different. If you're a single guy, sure, I think this applies even more. But yeah, if you're married with kids, I think there's a lot more to it. So. Joe, we've gone kind of long on this one, but very interesting. Just for a quick recap, this first 10 rules. We'll be back with the next 10 next week and just kind of for good discussion. Practice phone calls over texting. Never judge a man based on his political opinions. Number 3, stop reading self-help books. Number 4, learn to throw and take a punch. Number 5, never order a Cosmopolitan. Never order any alcohol. We'll just kind of add on that. Number 6, only buy furniture if you have a girlfriend. Number 7, dress well as a form of respect. Number 8, learn to cry in private. Number 9, stop trying to be funny all the time. Number 10, take responsibility for a friend's pain. Again, we don't agree with all those. These are just kind of this individual's, which I need to get his name again, Mark something, Mark Granza, his rules for masculinity. So we'll be back next week with another 10 that we will go back and forth. Do we agree? Do we disagree? what I think is most important is that you as a godly man kind of run your filter through obviously God's word in the Bible, but also just kind of common sense about it. A lot of these are somewhat common sense, even if we might disagree with them. And so, yeah, those are my closing thoughts, Joe. Anything to wrap with?
His 11 through 20 is better than his 1 through 10. I'll tell you that. I'm excited for next week. Just
should be good.
Looking ahead, if you have not looked at the article and you want to wait, you'll get them next week. It should be real good. And hopefully you like this one. Again, give us your thoughts. Do you agree, disagree? Tell us about your takes, Discord, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, whatever it is, wherever you find us. But yeah, we'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. This has been episode 145 of the Godly Amen Podcast. We'll talk to you again next week.